Welcome to the BMX News Announcer Tower podcast. I'm Mike Carruth. As a result of the COVID close down, one of the favorite things in BMX has been missing since March. Elite racing has not been seen since the Lone Star Nationals on March 7th. We're used to seeing the elites at Pro Series races throughout the year, but like most things, COVID has changed the elite BMX game along with most other things of everyday life, at least for 2020. What have our top stars been up to for the past 5 months? To find out more and talk about the future of elite racing, we're pleased to welcome back to Announcer's Tower, Connor Fields and Elise Willoughby. Connor, Elise, welcome. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Wow, 5 months. It's been a long time.
Yes, yeah, it sure has. I mean, it went by in a flash, you know, really, and in some ways, and in other ways, it seems kind of like 100 years ago, in other ways. So much has changed, both in the world and in elite racing, of course, with the Olympics being pushed back to 2021 and the USA BMX Pro Series being canceled in favor of a winner-take-all Grands battle, and we're going to talk more about that. But you know, what have you guys been up to? I mean, you're what we know about you is that you live and breathe BMX all day, every day. It's training, it's, you know, conditioning, mental conditioning, and all that you do to keep at the top of your game. All of a sudden, someone just says, "Hey, that's all off now, and we'll call you when it's ready." What have you all been up to since racing went on pause? Elise, why don't you answer first, and then we'll hear from Connor.
Yeah, it's been interesting not traveling every other weekend, that's for sure. Not packing the bags, put those up in the rafters and then in storage for a little bit. So it's been, like you said, it's gone by in a flash in some ways, but it seemed like it's dragged on for a long time in others. I think, you know, like you said, people think we only eat, sleep, breathe BMX. I mean, that's true to an extent. That is our job, but, you know, it's in a way, kind of just different to have a routine at home and just kind of falling into a training rhythm and just, I guess, I don't know, per se, to lead a normal day-to-day life without obviously all the travel, like I said. So it's been tough in the extent of what we love to do is compete. And obviously this was meant to be a massive year for us.
Yeah.
And everything was taken off pretty good for the start of 2020 on the American side of things. And I think it was just a bit of a shock at the start. Like, you kind of had this feeling like, okay, well, things might start getting delayed or changed, whatever it may be, but you kind of still had that sight set on the Olympics, that this will for sure go ahead. It's the Olympic Games. They're going to find a way to do it. And then obviously, the pandemic just kept obviously increasing numbers and things got postponed again. So
yeah,
I think that shock set in and it took a little bit to kind of reset and refocus and find an odd rhythm of day-to-day life, like I said, of not traveling and not going somewhere every couple weeks.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's been okay now that we've settled in. Excited to get back to racing, but it has been just a swallow what is and accept it and do what you can and, you know, just treating it like a normal job. You know, we're lucky, yes, there's things delayed, but, you know, racing, as I'm sure Connor can agree, it's not like being an athlete isn't a 9-to-5. It's an everyday thing. It's a lifestyle. So you can't really fall off completely or you're going to be regretting it when you try to come back to it.
Right.
So trying to keep that rhythm.
And Connor, what about you? Like, what have you been up to since the racing went on pause?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit similar to Elise, right? Like, we both started the year off really well, winning World Cups, national titles. Like, everything was tracking really nicely, kind of the way I'm sure we both drew it up. But then, yeah, I guess for me personally, I kind of, not called, but I figured the Olympics was going to get postponed or canceled well before they made the announcement. When they were still sitting saying, the Olympics is happening, the Olympics is happening, but then literally every other event in the world, not just BMX, that was in the same time frame, was already getting canceled. I kind of read the room, so I actually took some time off in March and April, and just, you know, I had to take a deep breath, because with the Olympic stuff, it's like you build and you build and you build and you put all your heart and soul into preparing for that season, and then when, you know, you realize that it's going to get stretched out for an additional year, I felt like I needed to take a deep breath, because it was kind of a whole reset of getting back into it, right? When you come into the Olympic season, you're like, I have 6 months that I have put everything into, and I can, you know, see the light at the end of the tunnel as far as the work and the stress goes. And then, you know, it got extended. And then obviously Elise and I, at least, well, you're 29 now, I think, and I'm 27.
You're
so
not
we're
supposed
no
to say that.
It's on the moto sheets. We'll find out.
So yeah, I mean, we're not 19 years old anymore, right? When it's just, you know, all new and fresh. So I took a little bit of a deep breath and took a bit of a break in the beginning, and I'm not gonna lie, it was tough. For me, the tougher than the BMX side of it wasn't what was hard. And I don't mean that BMX is easy, that's not what I'm saying, but adjusting a training plan and preparing for a race is something Elise and I have done hundreds, if not thousands of times. So the stress of figuring out, you know, what day I'm going to do squats and how much weight I'm going to use in preparation for next year, that's not necessarily what the big deal was. It was the life stuff. It was like not leaving your house for 30 days or during that initial lockdown. It was, you know, my wedding got canceled. You know, I had trips planned to see my mom and grandparents who live on the East Coast who got canceled, and you know, I don't know when I'll be able to see them again. And it was more the life stuff that was tough for me as opposed to just the BMX side of things. But some positive stuff: we got a puppy a couple months ago. We got a pandemic puppy, and he's been awesome. And then in addition to that, I've decided to try to make some lemonade out of the lemons of 2020, and I'm going to try to finish college this year. So
awesome.
I've taken 5 classes over the summer. I'm in school every day from 1 to 4, and then I'm going to do the same in the fall, and I'm going to try to wrap up college this year. So been good to have something to focus on. And then obviously I'm training full time again, getting back into it in preparation for the races on the calendar.
Yeah.
And you know, obviously everything's in flux. You don't know something's going to happen until seemingly a week before, but you have to prepare as if it's going to happen. So that's how I'm approaching it.
Definitely. What kind of puppy?
He is a Hoodle, which is a Wheaton Terrier mixed with a poodle. I didn't even know they existed, but one of our neighbors ended up getting one of the siblings, and there was one left, and they asked us if we were interested, and we kind of just said, yeah, you know what, let's do it. And we got a Hoodle named Oliver.
Oliver. All right. Well, Mila BMX friends, you know, I mean, so, right?
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
So when, you know, we talked a moment ago about training and kind of that, you know, the whole, you know, like spinning down the turbines of, you know, of prep, and we don't have to get too deep, you know, too technical about it, but I mean, you know, do you keep like a pretty consistent training program with this pause? Or, I mean, you sort of answered that already, Connor, but do you go into a maintenance mode of sorts, or like, how do you even manage that? I mean, is there a plan? Like, do coaches come in and kind of help you to figure that out? Or do you just know based on your body?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think, same to Connor. I think, for us, obviously, the Olympics was the race of the year. The World Championships were a race of the year. So your sights are kind of set on those things, and you're in the, like, 12th hour at this point in that training phase, and that kind of last block, and like Connor said, going really hard for it. But then when you get the official word that things are postponed, and you got to reset that, because you can't stay in the same phase, you know, that you are within a month out from a big race, 2 months out from a big race for a year and a half. Yeah. It just doesn't work. So things go in phases, right? And so same thing. I took a break as well when everything started, because again, like I said, you got to reset kind of. You're not going to be doing the same training anyway. And just mentally to kind of lock in for another big prep. But obviously, I'm lucky and I'm in a fortunate situation with the hubby being the coach as well. And I mean, he can read the situation pretty well where I'm at, just by where we're at in the day, and you know, just read my moods as well and when I'm ready to do things. So we took the time needed to kind of reset, and then just kind of identifying, okay, well, we don't know when we're racing, but like Connor said, you got to prepare that there will be a race. And so you kind of just have to pick a time that, you know, when do you think something's going to happen? And we kind of always figured November, there'd probably be something by November, if anything, in 2020.
Yep.
So kind of just went in the mindset of not expecting anything until that point. And, you know, be as ready as you can if something else comes up, but not getting your heart set on anything. And just locking into a training rhythm. And sure enough, you know, we've got two races on the calendar, whether they happen or not, who knows. But, you know, just preparing for those. And, yeah, like I said, just I'm lucky having coach in the same household and company and the dog and all that. So I've in a way enjoyed the quarantine.
I was thinking about that
during, in a weird way.
Yeah, I was thinking about that just during the whole thing, you know, just in watching your social media and stuff like that. I mean, you know, it must be an interesting, you know, a good and fresh, like the reset, because you guys have been in BMX mode for so long. This was a moment where you could not be in BMX mode and just be a couple. That must have been an interesting and kind of a nice fresh breath, right?
Yeah, it is. Did so many home projects that never get done because we're always in and out. And just, I love doing that stuff anyway. So I think just kind of taking your mind off of that, the racing side of things, and just like you said, just doing a day-to-day normal couple, you know. I mean, we literally, like Connor said, you weren't leaving the house. Like, California is pretty strict on the rules as well still. And yeah. You know, you're not going many places. We're spending a lot of time with each other. And I guess we're lucky that we kind of always spend a lot of time together. So we aren't trying to kill each other yet. Living in the same house all day, every day, working and living. But, yeah, it's been good. And obviously having the dog, she's attached already. And then you add this to it. Oh, my goodness. Whenever we do go race again, I think the world's going to end for her. She's going to be so sad. But yeah, so we've just enjoyed that, you know, walking into, like, you know, going on the daily walk at the same time and having our coffee and just being a couple and, you know, whatever that is, doing a project that day. Redid the garage, which was a huge thing for me. That was a massive project. You couldn't even pull a car in our garage before. So.
Too many big checks in there. Too many podium checks in there blocking the way.
Yeah,
Connor, in your case, Connor, what, so you talked about the, you know, the deep breath and the kind of the pause mode on that. Was there, you know, just anything else that you said, you know, I've, this is one or two things I have to keep into, you know, into my daily program to keep keep the pace, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in the beginning, ultimately I was just focusing on staying positive and in good mental health. And, I'm not just going to sit in the couch and drink beers all day. Even though that's what I wanted to do. So in the beginning, I just rode my road bike and my mountain bike a lot for fun. I would just get up and go for a two and a half hour road ride and just listen to music or a podcast or something. Or, you know, I had a buddy of mine and we would go and we would ride the mountain bikes together. There's some really good mountain bike trails in Vegas. And, you know, I wasn't looking at it as just training for BMX racing. I was just looking at it as I'm staying in decent shape so that my starting level when I get back going again is high. Yeah. And then when I started getting back into training, I really, you know, I didn't, you know, gyms were all closed, right? So I could do sprints and then eventually the tracks opened up and I could go to the track and, you know, it wasn't ideal, but, after taking a little bit of a break, it was nice to get back into it. And, yeah, my coach and I, we just kind of are taking this time to work on some weaknesses and, you know, and try to bring those up and even turn them into strengths with this unprecedented amount of time that we've had to train.
Sure.
So yeah, I mean, just looking at it like that, but you know, at the end of the day, I've just tried to keep as positive as I can. And with that said, it's not always easy. It's been tough and there's definitely been days where I've been really low motivation or, you know, seeming a bit bummed out with everything going on, but, just keep reminding myself that racing will resume. And, you know, it's not like any of the training that's done now, even if those races get canceled, it's not like the training disappears. It's still in the bank and you still can draw from it in the future. So
sure.
Just been focusing on that, but kind of to what Elise was saying too, once you get into that routine, it becomes easy. But for us, it's been, our routine has been that we don't have a routine.
Yeah.
So getting into a daily routine of like, I get up at 5:36 AM now because I like to do it, you know, which is super weird because I would never do that before, but just getting into a daily routine and sticking with it. And, you know, Laura and I have been cooking 5-6 nights a week, which we would never do before. And like stuff like that. So it's been fun in an interesting way, but yeah, I'm definitely ready for it to be over.
So on your road rides that you went on around town, I mean, obviously the strip was totally shut down, darkened. Obviously, yeah. You know, and you're a lifelong Las Vegan. So, was that must've just been like totally, you know, outer limits weird, right?
Yeah, it was weird, man. It felt like something out of a movie, to be honest. You know, I had never seen the strip anything close to being like that. Right. And the only other time they'd shut it down in the history, I'm pretty sure is when JFK was assassinated. So, you know, to go down there, and I went at about 4:35 a.m. right as the sun was coming up, and see that there was literally 10 people on the strip. It was nuts. Yeah. But it was also very surreal, and it kind of made the whole thing even scarier. You know, the whole, it felt very post-apocalyptic, but
yeah,
it's back open now, but Vegas is a weird place just because so many of the jobs revolve around the strip, and so we've been hit really hard with a lot of hardship here because I think, you know, some 30% of jobs or something were on the strip, and they were all out of work. And so it's been a bit crazy here in town, but just like everywhere else, I'm sure has their own struggles.
Yeah, for sure. So you guys talked about, or some, one of you talked about the World Championships a moment ago. And one of the questions that I had for you was that, you know, I mean, it's tough to understand UCI and the rules and what their statements say and don't say. And so they, you know, the 2021, obviously the 2020 Worlds were canceled, after they couldn't get it together. When I say get it together, I don't mean in a bad way. I mean, just make it happen. Just from a medical point of view down in Houston. So, the 2021 is going to be after Tokyo. So are y'all going to be running 2019 jerseys and numbers up through the Olympics?
Yes.
Yep. So that's what's happening. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so,
yeah, I just got 2-for-1. We'll go with that.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, indeed.
No.
Picked a good year to win.
Yeah. It's a huge bummer that Houston isn't happening, though, sure. It's no matter what number you're rocking or defending, you want to race a world championships. And it was pretty exciting for the U.S. to have that opportunity just, you know, a few months before the games. And Houston's a great track. And I think that would have been the biggest world we probably would have ever seen, how convenient it is and location wise, etc.
Sure.
And I was pretty bummed when it got fully canceled rather than postponed, just for U.S. racing in general.
Yeah. So are the positions as far as qualifying, like nations points and whatnot, is that locked now? Is that not, there's no more addition after March 3rd, or are they going to open it back up for 2021 events? Do you know, Connor?
I have no idea. For me personally, I try not to concern myself with that, and I just focus on performing at events. And if you're one of the best guys, you'll be on the team.
Keep
it pretty simple.
That's a good one.
I think that that they are going to have or attempt to have the latest rumors of what I've heard. I mean, can't really quote anything right now because it's always changing still. But would be like 2 World Cups next year.
Okay.
We know nothing in 2020 will count, but potentially 2 World Cups in 2021. And I think that's, you know, part of why they, you know, move the Worlds and Papendal back as well. Because I don't know if they just didn't want to change the venue or how it was going to work, but you know, the Worlds hold a huge amount of weight normally in all of that selection process. So I think that changing venues and all of that, they weren't going to do that. So I guess there'll be no World Championships anymore.
In their defense though, you know, it's not like they had a contingency plan for this sort of thing, because no one in a million years would have imagined a situation in which this would have happened, right?
Right.
So I think they're kind of working as they go, because, you know, I know within USA Cycling's Olympic criteria, they are waiting to find out if there's any more events that are going to take place before they publish what the revised US criteria is. So they're just kind of on standby mode too, which I would have to assume UCI is kind of on standby mode to see if they can have events. If they can have events, sure, they'll probably want to count them for qualification to some degree. But if they can't have events, they need to probably work on a plan for that too. So it's all kind of up in the air.
Yeah, still, you know.
I know freestyle is doing some virtual stuff. I know racing's a different boat. We have competed quite a bit, so we do have 2 years or a year of points kind of under our belts already. So our discipline, I think they could come up with a pretty good and fair way of going about it. But, yeah, you know, some of the other disciplines, I mean, weren't decided at all, and some were already decided a year ago. So it's pretty wild, and you don't envy their position.
The wild part that a lot of people probably don't know about is that Elise and I were on the Olympic team for about 2 weeks, and we got dropped off of it because when all the events were canceled but the Olympics weren't, the points were finalized. So we made the Olympic team, and then when the Olympics became postponed, they had to reopen the points. So we made the team, and then we were off the team again.
Oh, man.
We're like in the club, but we're not in the club, you know?
Right.
So, and to that end, once the change in plans, you know, for Tokyo obviously was a shock, and it was the uncertainty of not knowing, and then, like you said, you know, on and then not on. And so when you finally found out that it was going to be, that it was postponed instead of canceled, what were your feelings about that?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I would never want it to be postponed or canceled all out, right? Like, I was much happier when I found out that it was just going to be postponed, because originally the IOC was saying that they were either going to have it or cancel it. There was zero chance of a postponement, which was scary, right? Because, you know, we do all these races. We do these USA BMX races, the World Cups and all that. But at the end of the day, the big carrot, the one that you're really dreaming about every single day, at least for me, is the Olympics. So it would have been a huge bummer if it would have been completely canceled. So for them to just postpone it, it was like, all right, cool. We're still going to get to do it, just at a later date. And then obviously, you know, there's a lot of things that have to happen between now and then for it to take place. You know, I mean, personally, I don't see them being able to have it without either a cure or a vaccine of sorts. But we just have to be optimistic that they'll be able to do that between now and then, and that we'll be able to have the Olympics. But I'm, again, like we said earlier, I have to prepare as if it's going to happen and believe as if it's going to happen. And that's really all I can do.
Right. Elise, what about you? What were your thoughts when you found out about the postponement?
I mean, much the same, you know, like I said earlier, this year was set to be such a big year. And, you know, you're ticking along, things are going well, and it's a pretty decent blow to have to kind of swallow that it's changing. But I agree 100%. I was all in favor of a postponement over a cancellation.
Sure.
There's also rumors, you know, and it could still be on the cards, I don't know. But, you know, not having fans there was put up at one point. And I think postponing over going forward with no fans was probably a good idea. Just for the spirit of the games and, you know, bringing the world together and what the Olympics is all about. I hope that it can go as an Olympics can or should. We don't know if it will, but I think that having the postponement and giving ourselves the time to try and aim for that and hopefully come up with proper health, you know, whatever we can to make it as safe as possible and hopefully make it as, for, I don't even know if this is a word anymore, but normal as possible.
Yeah.
That would be ideal. And yeah, like Connor said, just preparing as if it's going to happen. That's all we can do. And, you know, there's been a lot of money invested in all these things. Sponsors around the world, countries, global, you know, everything. And nobody wants to see it not happen. And you know, you'd hate to have all those companies, you know, as well, I guess be investing in nothing as well.
It's tens of billions of dollars. Yeah, tens of billions of dollars,
and
for
like,
sure.
Moving it was a huge ordeal as well, you know, like, and you know, there was talk, oh, will it get postponed a few months or whatever. There was just no way. If you're going to postpone it, you have to give a good amount of time. And I guess as far as they could go was, you know, a year later before then they've got the Winter Olympics that are 6 months after that at this point.
Right.
So, it's, you know, they've delayed it as long as they felt they could. But, you know, trying to, I don't even know how many millions of people that brings in into the city of Tokyo, and the hotel arrangements and travel, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And trying to reset all of that is a nightmare. So it had to be at least a year.
Yeah, it was like 2 million people a day was what I read, because I wrote about this when it was happening. Like, what the question in my article was, you know, will coronavirus cause the postponement? This was in like early February or something like that. And so, yeah, I mean, it's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So, Connor, I want to come to you for this next question, which is, I think you're a sports fan, right? Like, you're a hockey fan and some of the other sports, right?
Oh, I love it all, man. I'll watch anything.
So,
especially after going a few months with no sports on TV.
Right. So as an athlete yourself who's been in that, you know, that arena, so to speak, that, you know, with lots of fans and screw the crowds, the roar of the crowd kind of thing, you know, gosh, it must just be weird for, you know, to see, you know, watch these hockey games or some of these other sports with no fans. Do you think that it changes the whole thing for the players?
Yeah, I don't know. It's tough because where I think it would have the effect or the change is in the beginning, like in pregames with the hype or, you know, the excitement before. And then after a scoring play or, you know, a pivotal moment when there's nothing going on, and it would normally be when the fans are going crazy. But I think when you're actually playing, you know, so for example, in ice hockey, when they're actually skating and shooting and there's action going on, or basketball, same thing. I don't know if it really affects anything. You know, I can't speak from their perspective, but I can speak from our perspective where I've raced in front of 10,000 at the Olympics, and I've also raced in front of 46 people at a USA BMX race. And when you are on the gate, once that cadence goes from there to the finish line, it's the same. You know, you're just locked in. You're focused on doing what you're doing. You know, the pro rollout with the small number of fans is nowhere near as exciting as when they call your name at the Olympics. But once that cadence gets going, it's much the same. So I would have to assume that that's kind of the same experience for these guys. But again, I have no idea because I've never been in that particular situation.
Right, right. Well, when, you know, Elise talks about the, you know, the Olympics, and the one possibility of actually seeing it happen will be the possibility of removing fans from the equation. You know, it could be in your future. Hopefully it's not, and hopefully you get to race with the roar of the crowd. And,
you know, once you cross the finish line at the Olympics, and then the TV camera pans to the athlete's parents or family members that are in the crowd, you know, celebrating, and then you get to see them, you know, with their families or their people celebrating. Like, that's part of the Olympics, right?
Sure.
And I guess part of any major event. But, you know, if it has to be socially distanced, and like you win and then you can't even go hug anybody, and you're just like standing there like, what do I do now? Like, that's not quite the same thing.
So it looks like we'll, you know, as we've been talking about, there's going to be some racing in 2020 with Rock Hill World Cup in November, on 6 and 7 November. And then the Grands, of course, in its usual time, on Thanksgiving weekend. Do you both, you know, plan on racing both Rock Hill and Grands?
Yeah, my plan would be to go to the events that are happening there. Obviously leading the World Cup stuff, and it's in the U.S., like to support that. And then the Grands is winner take all, so if you don't show there, you ain't got no chance. But we're all tied for the number one spot right now. So,
that's right.
Yeah, no, that would be the plan to go, yeah.
Cool. Connor, what about you?
Yeah, I'll do both. And so, you know, like I said, just preparing as if they're both happening. Elise and I are in the same boat. We're both leading World Cup points, and we're both tied for USA BMX points. So
that's right.
We both have a lot of motivation for those two events. And I think for, you know, from speaking from experience, whenever you can finish a year strong, right, on a good result, it helps carry momentum into the following year. So going to do what I can to finish this year out on a positive note, and understand that it could lead to building up some momentum for the following year.
Yeah, no doubt. So last week we did a podcast with Jeremy Smith and Carly Kane talking about the Pro Open concept that's going on right now, you know, in USA BMX. Do you all plan to hit any of those Pro Open races before Rock Hill to kind of get things going again?
I'm undecided. You know, I want to race, but at the same time, the idea of losing money to go to an event, isn't very appealing. Just full transparency. I don't think Chase would mind, if it's a Pro Series event, you get your travel covered for it. But for a Pro Open, you don't necessarily get your travel covered for it. So, that's just something I'd have to weigh out is, am I interested in doing that? And I might, just because I want to race and that's what I enjoy doing. But at the end of the day, I have a mortgage to pay, I've got bills to pay, and I haven't been able to do my job all year. So I have to be conscious of that as well.
Yeah, that's definitely makes sense. Lisa, what about you?
I don't, I should say, no, I don't plan to go to any of the Pro Open events. I've been racing a long time.
Yeah.
I love racing, but I don't think as far as a preparation to go to an event that I need that to feel ready. I have a different opinion on the Pro Open racing. I think it long-term could devalue the Pro class even more than it already has. I'm just going to keep going when there's points and like Connor said, financial gain, things that pro athletes worry about. I'm going to keep going to events when those things are on the line and not really feeling the need to put myself on the gate with everyone and everything and, different tracks, different rules, different stuff, or traveling, all of it, really not putting yourself at risk when there really isn't much on the line.
Yeah. So, and this kind of goes to that same angle. Now that the Pro Series racing has been canceled, do you see it coming back in its previous form in 2021 and beyond? Like, do you think there's going to be forever changes to the program? At least you kind of alluded to that a moment ago about, your fear and your thinking that of devaluing the class. And so what are your thoughts on that? And why don't you answer first, and I'd love to hear Connor on that.
Yeah, I don't want to talk down on anything. It's
sure.
Not that I don't like racing or any of that. It's obviously I love to race and I love to compete, but I also think that if you're showing up at the same event that you were going to go to anyway, like the same USA BMX rounds, that you were going to be a pro national race at one point, and you're racing for whatever the payback is. I don't know. I don't even know what it is. Maybe $200 or whatever the payback is. The pro purses are going to go down more, I think, because I don't know. I just see long-term that it's going to hit. Everyone's going to be in a financial low spot for a while moving forward.
Definitely.
And I think that it'll only make it more an easier transition to, I think, let the pro class down easy. In my opinion, with less racing, less money paid out, less, they already have how many classes. If you do Pro Open, there's one class they pay out and they don't even pay any money because it's 100% payback, as what I thought it was. Correct me if I'm wrong. And I just think that, to aspire to grow the class, you need to, it's got to be professional, number one. So Connor shouldn't be in the gate with Vet Pros racing. For nothing,
Yep.
That's just not highlighting the expertise and professionalism of those riders that are putting their heart and soul into it and obviously are the elite of the elite and making it work. And I think it could have effects in the future that it kind of let the pro class down easy. I'm a big fan of the whole series. The one day thing, I understand for this year that they had to come up with something. But as a whole, the series is awesome. And that's why it's prestigious. It takes a whole year and that's why it's awesome to win.
For sure.
So, yeah. Everybody was excited about the one day because it meant they didn't have to do the whole series to be up for the title, right, Elise?
Yeah, exactly. And when you've already raced a few races too, it kind of stinks to just have that work wiped out. But, for this year, I understand where it's at. I just don't know where that will put us moving forward. You want to see it grow. And I put this idea forward, actually, with Tori and them over on the other podcast as well that they do. I think that if you're going to host an event, and there are talks of some things like this happening, but ultimately what I think should happen is whatever the purse payout is, right, that maybe for the rest of the year, it's over 200 grand in that ballpark, right, between elite men and elite women that they're retracting, right, from paying out this year, which I understand, like I said, with where it's at this year and not having the same, you know, income on their end either. But why, if you're going to host a race, why won't they make it like what motocross did and have a series in that Tulsa building? If you're going to have it, have 6 days of racing or whatever it may be, and make a series, make every race count, have kids from USA BMX Foundation design tracks for the schools for the fall projects, have, you know, they can design tracks that the pros race on. Then by the time kids get there, you know, pros have raced how many days, everyone's tuning in, put some of that money that was, you know, taken out of the pro purse, put it back into growing the sport, put a package together that people can watch on TV that, you know, there isn't sport on. Like Connor said, you want to watch something. If you're going to put something together, put money into somehow growing your sport, you know, making a change rather than, I guess, just eliminating opportunity.
Well said.
I don't know, definitely. Just an idea.
Yeah. Connor, we don't have a whole lot of time left, but I do want to get your take on this and the next questions here. So do you think that there'll be forever changes to the pro program, whether that, you know, pro, you know, in this case means elite, A pro and vet pro?
So a long answer, I'll try to condense. I want to preface this by saying one thing that I think often gets forgotten about when people talk about the pros, and this includes the sanction and the decision makers, is we've been, Elise and I and Corbin and Nick and all the guys you think of, and Jeremy Smith, like you mentioned, we've been racing BMX for over 20 years, and we started as the 6 intermediate. And as the 5 and under girl in Elise's case, and went through the whole process and chased the district and the state and the gold cup. And then you get to the pro class and it almost feels like you are devalued when you turn pro. And there's a lot of reasons why. And I don't want to get too into that, but I think it's worth mentioning, you know, that sometimes that fact gets forgotten about when talking about the pros. As far as this season, the thing I was most disappointed about is that there was seemingly, and I can't speak on anyone else's perspective other than my own, and Elise, you can chime in here if you had a different experience, but it seemed like there was little to no effort put forth to try to find a solution to figure out a way to make the Pro Series work. Whether that was asking the pros, hey, would you guys be willing to race for a minimal or even just a payback purse? Hey, would you guys be willing to do a condensed series where it's going to be less races? We're going to have 5 stops at the races. You gotta be ready to go in a couple weeks' notice because the schedule is going to change. Are you guys okay with doing that? Hey, would you be able to race these smaller tracks that normally we wouldn't race? And the answer to all of those questions, at least on my end, would have been yes. But we found out the same way seemingly everybody else found out, where I just opened up an email notification and said, hey, you don't have a job this year. And, you know, I understand if I put my business hat on, I get it to an extent. I can understand the reasonings behind that. And I'm able to put myself in their shoes and get that. But it was the lack of effort is what it seemed like on my end. And Elise, just chime in quickly. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, and I think that's kind of where I'm going with where I was going with the pro open comments, that it's going to be the same things that they could have done.
It's no extra work for them no extra work to split up the classes a little bit. Where I get worried, and again, you know, not to bring up Elise's age and my age again, but Elise is 29, I'm 27. We're at the tail end of our careers. We've done it all. You know, we've been pro, won medals, won ABA, USA BMX titles, you know, made a few bucks doing it. But where I fear is the current kids between the age of 13 and 18, and it's them and it's their families that should be concerned. Because when I was 13, when I was 15, when Elise was 15, there was so much opportunity to make a living racing BMX as a professional. There was so much, you know, opportunity to travel and to have good sponsors and to do a lot of racing and to feel like you were valued. And that's seemingly going away. And, you know, it's not going to affect Elise and I as much as it's going to affect the 15 expert who dreams of being a pro one day and dreams of going to the Olympics. And, you know, if there's going to be change, I think it needs to come from the pros, yes, but also from the future pros and the industry, because it's them who are going to suffer more than Elise and myself. And that's something I think, you know, everybody is so focused on their own racing, right? When you're 15 expert, you think that winning NAG One is the be all and end all and everything is focused on that. But, you know, I think it's worth kind of thinking, you know, a 5-year plan and thinking ahead and thinking, whoa, you know, if things keep trending in this direction, I'm just going to be racing expert class forever, you know, and going for NAG plates, and I'm never going to have these opportunities. I think, you know, Sam and Joris and then Trent Jones were really the last foreigners that moved over to America full time to kind of chase the BMX dream. And the dreams dried up. Like Anthony Dean just went home. You know, and Elise is going to know more about that situation than me, but there's not the opportunities that there were 5 and 10 years ago for the pros. You know, BMX hasn't contracted that much. I don't think the industry has any less money than it might have had 5 years ago. But for whatever reason, it's not going to supporting the professional level. And like I said, I think the next generation is the one that's going to suffer. And I think they're the ones who need to begin taking notice and even speaking up.
Yeah. Well, and I asked Jeremy Smith about that in the show last week. So it'll be, you know, once you hear that, it'd be interesting to hear your take on it. But, you know, just kind of along that same line, Connor, I had this question down to talk about. It's a good segue into it, which is just the fact that, you know, we had a couple months ago, we had a text exchange after an article I wrote about why the turnout was so poor at the first three races. And I mean, that to me was sort of a harbinger of the pro class is dying on the vine. Like no one's showing up. They're not even showing up to race anymore. And you had some very good points that made me, you know, rethink my position on that. And I'd really like it if you could share that with the listeners.
Yeah, basically when I saw you say that article, I was frustrated because, you know, I couldn't think of more than maybe one or two people that you were referring to. And what you were saying is that pros don't show up and race anymore, and then all they do is complain. But the truth is it's the same group of guys that race every weekend. If you look at the results or you look at the signups, you know, at 9 out of 10 pro races every year, it's the same core group of riders. But that core group of riders is shrinking year after year after year, because people are retiring, quitting, moving on, and it's not being refilled by upcoming talent, because the talent is either staying amateur because they're having better opportunities and offers from a sponsor to stay amateur, which is a completely different problem in and of itself and deserving of its own podcast, or just deciding that they look at the landscape and they're like, yeah, like this doesn't make sense for me. You know, I looked at the grands. If you look at the data, the Grands in 2019 was the first time, and I've raced pro at the Grands for 10 years. It was the first time we didn't have quarterfinals. We had semis. And that's the biggest race of the year. Everybody shows up. There's just less and less and less people. And if you go look at the results from a race 2 or 3 years ago, you see a bunch of these names, you know, Sean Gain or, you know, Nick Cole or these guys who were racing pro, and then they just moved on. And you're not seeing 5 and 6 and 7 new kids coming into the class single year. So, you know, before we even get into why someone from California wouldn't want to fly all the way to Georgia to where they get third place both days and still lose money, that's a completely different topic. There's the whole thing of just there's less people racing now, total. And that doesn't ever get brought up in these conversations of, oh, the pros never show up to race.
Yeah, no, it's, and then like I said, that totally turned, you know, it turned the light bulb on for me, because like you said, I mean, I'm sort of calibrating my opinion based on those days of yesteryear, and that's not necessarily a realistic, you know, a target anymore, at least with the participation pool.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, I have a spreadsheet with the numbers comparing the entries at events from 2014 to 2019, and it's a decrease of over 50% at every single event.
Yeah,
and there you go. And I think about some of the names.
You also have to look at 2015, Connor, and think about the 14, whatever you said, some of the pro racing, the money that was up for some of those rounds as well.
Well, I mean, it all coincides with the pay cut in 2017. That's when numbers started dropping. But just looking at a drop in 5 years, and it's just crazy when you start looking at the data.
Yeah. Well, we're coming down to the end of the segment. Just got a couple minutes left here. But I'd just like to hear, from both of you, like, what are your career plans beyond Tokyo, both BMX and otherwise? And Elise, why don't we start with you, and then we'll go to Connor.
Well, I don't have a hard end date on my career anytime soon, as much as Connor keeps trying to say how old I am on this podcast.
Hey, I just speak the facts.
But you know, I will be 30 for 2021, which is crazy to say. But
crazy to hear.
I don't have a hard end date. Yeah, isn't it? It's wild. I was just thinking that I turned pro at 15. We just watched my first pro race on YouTube, actually, and it was crazy. I was like, that was 15 years ago. Oh my gosh. But anyways, I think I'll keep racing. I'll keep doing my thing. Who knows what doors may or may not open after the next year. But, you know, long term, I definitely see myself going into owning some sort of business or something, maybe hosting events and that sort of thing. But we'll see what happens on this side of the fence, this side of the pond with racing and what kind of an impact Sam and I could maybe potentially have down the track. But for now, we're just, you know, kind of focused on this next year and then obviously my career for the next couple. And just see how long I'm healthy and motivated. I think motivation is the big thing.
Sure.
So as long as there's competition coming up and you're competitive, I think that's the big part of it. Obviously financially stable. So yeah, no hard end plan. But enjoying it for what it is right now.
Do you see yourselves staying in the U.S. or are you thinking about making a dash to the down to Oz?
Down under is definitely on the card, but there's no date set on that either. So it kind of, you know, there's so many things as athletes, and I think that's something actually with this whole pandemic that's kind of played into athletes' favor. We live every day. Not knowing what the result's going to be, you just put your best foot forward and hope the, I don't want to say stars align, but the things come together when they need to. And you can't ever, there's zero expectation. You know, you're never entitled to any result, and you just have to put your best foot forward anyway. And I think that unknown, living in that unknown all the time, has helped get through this kind of challenging time that everyone is seeing now, living in that unknown, not knowing if you're gonna have a job tomorrow, not knowing if, you know, what might happen. I think athletes deal with it well, and I think that, you know, for us, you know, we're just rolling with the punches, and like I said, there's really no dates on any of that. It's all on the cards though. I mean, Sam definitely wants to get back to his family. It's a great place to be, but you know, there's a lot of opportunity here in the U.S. as well, and my family's here, so
right.
I don't think we'll be in San Diego forever, but we'll definitely be near some family sooner than later.
Nice. Connor, what about you? You mentioned about, you know, taking a fast track, or, you know, a more serious and aggressive stance on getting school done. What are your career plans, both BMX and otherwise?
I mean, I guess similar to Elise, I'm going to put everything into finishing out next year with the Olympics and then the World Championships. And then from there, just kind of decide if the motivation's there. If I wake up in the morning and I don't feel like doing sprints anymore, I'm not going to force myself to do it. And that's where having the college degree in the back pocket's a nice little thing to have, because I feel as if I could transition smoothly whenever that time comes. But yeah, I'm getting a degree in management, and ultimately I want to actually be an agent and be an athlete representative in action sports. I love sports. I love business. I love helping others, and it kind of combines all three of those. And actually this summer I've been doing an internship with my agent at Wasserman. So I've been helping do all sorts of stuff like proofread contracts and scout talent and deal with people and make phone calls and things like that. So it's been quite fun.
Wow,
doing
cool.
The internship there for college credit. But yeah, ultimately long term, I think that's what I'd like to do.
Sweet. Well, we just got
November of 2021. Connor goes on to be my agent because I'll never retire.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah, if you're still winning, I'll sell you. I'll call everyone and I'll make you some money.
But notice that was the caveat there. If you're still winning, then they'll take you on.
Yeah, if you're not good enough, I'm not taking you. Sorry.
I only work with winners.
It's a cutthroat business. Well, at least I know you've got to get going, and Connor, your time is very valuable, so I don't want to hold you up too much longer. But just as a final parting shot, is there any final words, final thoughts, shout outs, et cetera, you'd like to give? Elise, why don't you go first, and we'll close it out with Connor.
Yeah, thank you for following up with us and the pros in general, and just kind of following the storylines. Obviously, like you said, it's been a while since people have been in the loop of what's going on. So thanks for having us on and having some of the hard discussions too. I think it's good to have good conversation, and thank you for me to, all of my, friends, family, sponsors, obviously Sam, just sticking by through obviously what everyone has said, the unprecedented times, and we don't know what's going to happen, but we keep doing our best, and I hope that people feel as connected as they can and follow along the journey and just stay happy and healthy and positive.
Awesome. I'd like to do more of this, by the way. I mean, in any time, that we've can put together a group and come on and talk more, I'd really love to do it. Connor, on your side, any final shout outs, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I guess, thanks for having us on, and those listening, thanks for listening. And one thing that I think is worth mentioning as a way to kind of, if you care about the pros, if somebody cares about the pros, they want to support us right now and even into the future. If you have a favorite pro and you buy a bike because they're your favorite, don't be afraid to send that company a message and say, hey, I bought this bike because your rider so-and-so is my favorite pro. And that goes for parts and gear and all that stuff. And I think that goes a long way. Or if a rider, takes time out of his day to really talk to you or your child or goes above and beyond, it's always worth mentioning that to the people that are sponsoring and supporting the professional. And obviously right now we don't have any races, so we're relying on our sponsors. So I think that's something that could go a long way. And again, not just for me or Elise, but this is for everybody. Because if things continue kind of on this pathway, we're going to be even more reliant on sponsorship to live out our dreams. So just think that's worth mentioning.
That's huge. Yeah, that's really great. Thanks so much. Well, it was a real treat, to chat with both of you. As I said, I want to do more of these. So let's plan on that. And hopefully, things can get back to quote normal pretty soon. And racing gets back in motion. So hopefully we can count on YouTube.
Sorry to cut you off. I know Elise has to run in 3 minutes,
yep.
But I, end up going to a pro open, let me know. I'd love to cut you off.
Okay. Sounds good. Race is on.
I just think it's so funny that we would line up next to each other.
All right. Well, so we'll wrap it up. Elise, we'll give you a time to have a potty break before your next call. And thanks so much for being here. And so to the listener, that's all the time we have for today. And for Connor Fields and Elise Willoughby, I'm Mike Carruth. And thanks so much for being here today.